This is Hitchhiking Off the Map.
And that was a pretty influential trip in my life, in that everything went wrong that possibly could go wrong.
Cut class and just go down and practice, or go down and say I was practicing.
I said, so Grandma, you know, did any of them ever, like, make a move on you? And she said, well, there was this one man. He was very small.
We tried to escape from bombing, from shelling.
He just stopped. He was like, did you hear that? I was like, yes, I heard that.
Sometimes people have to bury musical instruments in the mud to escape from the war.
And it's a blood sacrifice. You know, people are supposed to die in this thing.
We need to have a kind of music in our life. So we kept doing that again and again.
And that's like, that's bliss, man. If you can get there like once a year.
Hello and welcome. This is Hitchhiking Off the Map. This is Conrad Bishop.
And Elizabeth Fuller, with a show about journeys, those amazing trips that don't show up in any travel brochures.
And today, three stories about artists' journeys. A cartoonist whose trips become comic books, a classical violinist whose path suddenly veered off the map, and a man who grew up playing music in the war-torn Mekong Delta.
Now, if you've been listening to us on this show for a while, you've probably gotten the feeling that, yes, we do have an agenda here. It's a very laid-back, camouflaged, low-key, yes, political agenda that comes out of our feeling that our lives shouldn't be ruled by fear, whether it's driven by fear or constricted by fear.
Fear of failure, fear of the unknown, fear of what? Judgment, flying, fear of where the next buck is coming from. I personally have to confess to being really a chicken when it comes to risk, but I've sort of chosen to live my life pretending that I'm not, and if I can just carry out this self-deception until I croak, that will be a worthy achievement.
Artists' journeys.
Well, the standard artist interview is something like, well, what did you do before you got famous, and how did you get famous, and then how did you crash, and then how did you make your comeback?
And that's not really the point here. And, you know, I don't think that an artist has any more courage than the person who gets up at 6 o'clock in the morning to feed the kids and pack the lunch and make the commute and go to work at a job they're probably not really thrilled with. But I think it's a different kind of courage when you're the one who drew the line that you put yourself on.
That's kind of nuts, maybe, but that's what these stories are about.
First story, Justin Hall.
Justin Hall lives in the Mission District of San Francisco. He's in his early 30s, and he travels a lot. And like us, he collects stories about journeys, which have taken the form of three comic books, true travel tales.
I grew up in Providence, Rhode Island, and went to school at SUNY Purchase in New York, and then I became a kind of a compulsive traveler around that time. I went to Europe a couple days after I graduated from high school, and that was a pretty influential trip in my life, everything went wrong that possibly could go wrong. We ended up sleeping in train stations half the time, and fighting off police watchdogs in Paris, and sleeping in the streets, and doing everything wrong. But there was something there, and of course our group of friends completely shattered by the end of the trip. We didn't even come with a guidebook, so we went to Paris and didn't know anything about Paris except for the Eiffel Tower, so we went and essentially hung out underneath the Eiffel Tower every day for a week. Everything was wrong, but it was a very important experience for me. I knew I wanted to go back and do it right at some point. My next big trip was through Africa, and that was after massage school, and that was really the kind of first time I came into my own as a traveler, and then came to San Francisco and continued traveling, and I've been obsessed with comic books my entire life, but it took me a little while to get into actually producing them and distributing them and stuff like that. But on the other hand, I needed to have the life experiences of going around traveling, especially for the material that I'm doing now, which is travel stories. But basically, it's my massage is how I make my living, and I love it, but my passion is really comic books. So, well, I did my first comic book. I was traveling in the Middle East and North Africa, and I came into Jerusalem and saw the Dead Sea Scrolls. I'd always wanted to see the scrolls, and seeing the scrolls was very profound, and I was, you know, wondering, well, how did, no one really knows exactly why they were hidden in the caves. So I I just came up with a story, basically. A story kind of popped into my head. So I went and sat down in this cafe in West Jerusalem and sat there for 5 hours and just cranked out the first draft of it. It's interesting approaching a travel narrative. I mean, I've seen some amazing, beautiful things, but that's not a story. So my first book was really focused on getting good, punchy stories that were fun and a lot of sex, drugs, and rock and roll kind of stories. But I did one of my grandmother when she was she was taking a ship across to Europe to study voice. She was probably like 19 or something, and this is, you know, before airplanes. So she was taking this big cruise ship, and there was a number of South American businessmen on the boat, and she had a chaperone with her, and the chaperone was seasick the whole time, so she kind of had run of the boat. You know, she would stay up all night, you know, partying with these South American businessmen. And I said, "So, Grandma, you know, did any of them ever like make a move on you?" And she said, "Well, there was this one man. He was very small. He was, you know, and I was a big German elephant of a woman, and here was this, you know, small South American man, but he was very suave and very, you know, very well spoken, and he spoke German as well." And he brought me down to his cabin at one point. But darling, it was full of all these whips and chains and leather ropes and things. And I was like, "Well, Grandma, what did you do?" You know, she said, "Well, I walked away." And I said, "Oh, come on, Grandma, you know, tell the truth here." And she said, "Darling, I would have broken him in half." So I believe her. I think she walked away from it. So there's two 16-year-old girls that are driving from Boston on the Green Tortoise bus, which is this hippie kind of backpacker type of bus out of San Francisco that does cross-country trips as well. And they were taking the Green Tortoise bus across from Boston to San Francisco. And along the way, the Green Tortoise bus stops at different national monuments and such. So they get to Bryce Canyon, and everyone else decides to hike down to the canyon, but these two naive, you know, 16-year-old punk rocker chicks decide they're going to climb down, kind of down the cliff, which is a quicker way to get down, they think. And of course, they get stuck on the cliff and can't get off, and then, you know, think that they're going to die, and they're, you know, smoking cigarettes there furiously, like trading Helen Keller jokes and just trying to figure out a way to deal with it. And finally, they look up and see a tourist is taking pictures of them hanging off of this branch. So finally, a ranger ends up having to rappel off the side and pick them up and rappel down to the bottom of the canyon. It's a very difficult task to do. And the whole time, they're being pretty obnoxious, you know, calling him Ranger Rick. And he says, you know, "Your cigarette butts will always be up there. You know, you shouldn't have been smoking a cigarette at National Monument." And they're just like, "Ah, you know, whatever, Ranger Rick." And finally, they get back up to the top and realize that the Green Tortoise bus has left without them. So it's a story, you know, they encounter this kind of life and death situation and this community of people that eventually help them, but they're not changed by this at all. And that was the point of the story, actually. Some people don't change. When you're 16 and you're a punk rocker, you know, sometimes it, you know, takes a while. Well, she's since become a wonderful woman who works with the Humane Farming Association. It has a lot of sympathy for the rest of the world, but not at 16 now. It took her a while longer. And the True Travel Tales number 1 and 2 were both anthology pieces of smaller stories. The third one is a full complete story, and that story is amazing. It was from a friend of mine who used to drive for the Green Tortoise bus line, and he did a trip down to northern Mexico in which there was a Swiss-German woman on the bus who stopped sleeping, and about day 4 she had a psychotic break and started manifesting multiple personalities, and they realized they had to get her back up to the United States. They had to essentially smuggle her back up to the United States, because if she was institutionalized in Mexico, she would maybe never come out. So they had to get to La Paz, and it was like a 3-day ordeal where, you know, she one of her personalities was a whore, and she would break out and start having relations with the Mexican guys in the plaza. And then she, probably at one of her worst states, she was on this ferry to get over to Baja, and she was manifesting all these multiple personalities and speaking in all these different languages, including like an African Click language, and, you know, speaking fluent Spanish at times, even though she had never learned Spanish, such as the power of the human mind, I suppose. But so she was completely insane, and they realized they had to get her off the ferry, but they had run out of Valium to slow her down. So the only way to stop her from jumping ship or doing something crazy and getting arrested would be to, they literally tied her up with rope and then threw a sheet over her, the bed sheet from the ferry room, and they hustled her past the ferry guards. But one of the guards notices and comes running over, you know, "Alto, alto," and ends up taking, you know, whisking off the sheet and sees this tied up woman underneath it. And he just grabs the sheet and he says, you know, in Spanish, he says, well, you know, this sheet is fairy property. So, you know, you can't steal this sheet, and kind of goes off in a huff and leaves the tied up woman there. So, which was a wonderful Mexican moment. But all true. So, yeah. I spent about 4 months in Nicaragua, and that was where I kind of learned most of my Spanish, and that was a very kind of important trip for me, and because I was more rooted there, and I kind of got a... Central America, I think, is an interesting place for an American to, you know, a United States citizen to travel in, because our government has had, you know, tremendous effects there that most of the American population, unfortunately, isn't really aware of. So I certainly arrive with a certain degree of ignorance, and coming into places like El Salvador and meeting people whose whole families have been wiped out by CIA-backed, you know, helicopters or whatever, certainly makes you feel more responsible about, or at least, you know, a sense of that my tax dollars did this, you know, and so you have to come back with a little bit more awareness and to know that, you know, your unawareness has effects in the world, especially as a citizen of the United States. You end up learning a lot about your own kind of national identity in interesting ways. I love the experience of coming home. I've got one little poetic thing in the back of the first issue about that, about kind of being in the mission in San Francisco again and being on my bicycle with a mission burrito in my belly and watching the fog come rolling off the hill. Very San Francisco things. I am fascinated with people who are always on the road, who never come, they don't have a home to come back to. I mean, I run into people like this every once in a while on my trips, and they're people that maybe have left 10, 20 years ago and never come home. And these people fascinate me because they're constantly remaking themselves in every situation and every environment that they find themselves. Whereas I want to come home. I want to have a community that I've known for longer than 2 weeks, and I want people to know my foibles, and I want to know theirs. So, yeah, it's very important for me to be able to come home between trips. But I can't imagine not knowing Spanish and not having, you know, tried to learn Arabic and not having seen a lot of the things I've seen. And I'm an information whore. I'm a kind of an experience junkie. And I guess travel is the most efficient way to get new stimulus, a big body of new stimulus at a time. And I thrive on that. I need new stimulus. I can't stay still. So the counterpoint to that is the fact that you actually spend a lot of your day being, I'm bored more often when I travel than when I'm at home, because there's whole chunks of my day where there's really nothing to do, you know, because you're, you know, on a bus from one place to another, or you're in a town waiting for the next meal, or you haven't met anyone yet. And there, you know, a lot of downtime, there's a lot of downtime, and that doesn't happen in my normal life. Here, I'm always on the go, you know, I always have something to be doing. I'm never bored. It just doesn't happen. But I actually can be bored at times when I'm traveling. I was going to go to Southeast Asia, but I might head back to Mexico instead. So we shall see. I've always heard wonderful things about Oaxaca, and I'm really drawn there. So, well, yeah, I'll see. By the end of the year, I'll be traveling again, but I'm not sure exactly where it's going to be yet. They come singing and shouting and stumbling like a landslide, urged on by pipe and charango players in front, and men and women with whips. A woman whips a man savagely from behind and is kicked in the stomach by another. She stumbles back, clutching at the bowler hat adorned with a large red flower that falls from her head. Like a wave, and the crowds already clustered around the tower, and the others spin drunkenly to meet the challenge. Two men grab each other by their handmade vests and beat each other in the face with their fists. One finally falls and the crown is on him, kicking at his head, chest, legs. This is no longer the Fiesta de la Cruz. It is the Tinku, a harvest celebration that existed before the Spanish. The Tinku is their blood sacrifice to Pachamama. Every year there must be blood spilt in order to secure fertility for the next year, and Pachamama is a thirsty goddess. The Tinku was one moment where it was very clearly shouldn't have been any outsiders there. It's a harvest celebration, Incan, or even pre-Incan, and it's a blood sacrifice. You know, people are supposed to die in this thing. It's they get drunk for 3 days. It's about 6,000 to 7,000 campesinos in central Bolivia. And they gather once a year and get outrageously drunk and just beat the crap out of each other. And in the past, 20 to 30 people would die every year. The year that I was there, I think 2 people died. You know, I saw people with their heads kicked open, and people were coming at me. I mean, they didn't want us there, pretty clearly. Most people did not want us there. And we shouldn't have been there. It was, you know, I've been to all these different kinds of festivals all over the world and always been welcomed and had a wonderful time. And this was one situation where this was a private celebration that didn't need eyes from the outside. But on the other hand, I am so glad I saw it. You know, which is really horrible because I shouldn't have been there. But it pushed all of my buttons. I mean, it was exotic, it was challenging, it was dangerous, it was everything that I look for. And so it was in some ways the ultimate travel experience for me. I loved it. So that was a very difficult one. Yeah.
I asked, how do you think you'd be different if you hadn't traveled?
Huh. I might have done a lot more comic books by now.
In San Francisco, we were talking with Justin Hall.
And yes, of course, he has a website. It is www.allthumbspress.com. This is Hitchhiking Off the Map.